Welcome to CFO Talk. I'm your host, Steve Ruhlswald, Chief Learning Officer at CFO.University. Joining us from Salt Lake City today is David Safir. David is a forward-looking business leader with an eclectic background ranging from systems analyst to global product marketer to president of divisions of Fortune 100 companies. All roles have prepared him for his current business, Cash is Clear, a cash flow advisory firm. He is a globally recognized expert in cash flow optimization. He earned his bachelor's degree from the University of Buffalo, has a certification in international business management from INSEAD, and has his master's from the Thunderbird School of Management. David recently joined our contributor corps at CFO.University. Thank you for that, David. And welcome, and it's great to have you on our show.
It is great to be here, Steve. I really appreciate you having me as a guest today.
Well, you've kind of taken by storm. I mean, people love what you're talking about when it comes to cash flow, and CFOs love cash flow. So your articles that you've prepared for us and shared with us on CFO.University have been really popular. And I know you're passionate about improving cash flows and maximizing profits of your clients. And you've shared some of the insightful cash flow concepts, you know, with our CFO.University community. And I'd like to dig a little deeper into some of those concepts. So in your piece, Cash Flow Management Being Unconventional, you note there are some dangers with being traditional in cash flow management. And so would you kind of fill in the blanks on why it's important to be unconventional in your cash flow management?
Part of it is thinking outside the box. Unfortunately, standard training for accountants who generally become, that's a general path to CFO, generally, it is based on historical results, and it's finance-focused, and too many of the really big opportunities are outside the finance department. The standard thinking is, well, bring in your receivables faster, make sure you're doing invoicing, pay your expenses slower, etc., and there's dangers behind being, A, having a really fairly small box, is number one. But number two, some of these things, like paying your expenses slower, if you were chronically late paying your vendors, for example, and we know this happens, some companies, if they're big enough, they're bullies in the marketplace, and they'll just pay when they want to. What do you think happened when it came to COVID as far as them being a preferred customer? People are going, well, we're short. Why would we ship to you, who's always paying us late? If we don't have enough product to supply everybody, we'll cut you off and supply to the people who actually pay us on time. You don't even have to pay us early. So sometimes this conventional wisdom can really backfire on us.
That's a great point, because these relationships become important. And if you're a finance person to come up through accounting, it becomes a numbers thing. And if you're not careful, the relationships can suffer because of that.
And this is a lesson that took me a while to learn, was that the relationships are often more important than the numbers. Companies don't just pay other companies. It's people work at the companies who make the payments to other people. Oftentimes, if you're representing the company that's selling, then you should have a good relationship, or somebody on your team should have a good relationship with the company that's paying you. You'll want to know their accounts payable clerk, if at all possible. Get on the phone with them. Go have lunch with them. Say, what do you need from us? And facilitating the relationship is going to get you paid faster than a piece of paper or a bunch of email flowing back and forth, especially if it gets contentious.
We have a tool that I love. It's called Cash Velocity Tool, and it's our cash velocity calculator, and it's a cash conversion calculator. What I probably haven't done enough of is emphasizing that cash conversion, you may want a slower cash conversion to improve relationships. So that may be more valuable than getting you in a negative working capital position, or improving your working capital so much that you're having your vendors fund you. So great way to express being unconventional in your thought. You know, you also propose in the same article, you propose a structure, implementing a solid cash management program. And can you just take us through those steps?
First of all, it starts with mindset. Mindset for managing cash is completely different than accrual-based accounting. So if that's what you're used to, you need to break out of that. You can go read articles that I've written, helps break through some of that mindset logjam. So that's one thing. Number two is basic modeling, which is cash modeling. then you have to be careful. It's not accrual-based P&L modeling. Did get into an argument, but I had a CFO going, yeah, we just paid some guy, and this is he was very proud that it was a retired CFO from a billion-dollar company. Well, guess what? They do not know how to think about a small company, and he showed me it was instantaneous. Like, sorry, Scott, but that is not a cash flow statement. That is an accrual-based P&L. And he sat there and said, no, we paid this guy to do a cash flow analysis for us. And there's nothing I could do. I didn't even have to look at the background. I just know how it works, because when you've got a receivable, your first month, you get zero cash. It's the second month. And the same thing with expenses. It's going to be divided over the first and second months, because some things you have to pay up front. Otherwise, and so you don't even have to look. So please, that's number two, set up a model that's cash-based modeling for revenue and expenses, and it has to be offset by timing. That's the huge issue, is when is it going to hit the bank account, or when is it leaving your bank account? So that's number two. Number three is learn how to manage your cash, which is simply saying, we're going to have a shortfall. Can we pull revenue in or push expenses out that are within our control? Can we pay a bill a week late? Yes, generally you can. Can we skip a month? Well, if they're utilities, you can actually wait a month. They don't start bugging you unless you're past about 2 months. And you need to understand which things can be moved how long. So that's management. Number four is mentoring. Mentoring means who else within the organization do you have to work with to help them understand these new concepts? Because you cannot just dictate. Organizations work in a way, generally it's osmosis when it comes to cash flow. Osmosis meaning it just happens the way it happens. We haven't really thought about it too much. And to make changes means you're working with either your own staff or with senior management or with the sales team or the marketing team or with operations, and you're mentoring them about how they impact cash flow. They probably don't realize it. And the last one is maximization, which is there's strategies out there that allow you to maximize cash flow, both short-term and long-term. I don't know if I say this in any of my articles. I've identified 195 so far, and I expect there's a lot more out there that are yet, I've just got to document. So maximizing cash flow is the last step.
Those are some great steps. I can really resonate with you on that 13-week cash flow forecast. It's a very common, certainly in the bankruptcy and in the trouble in the turnaround industry, the 13-week cash flow. And that's based on the direct cash method, not the indirect cash method, which is what usually gets put into the financial statement. But I think we push everyone. We just think you're going to know so much more about your business if you do a 13-week cash flow forecast. You have to know your business. You have to know why inventory is growing. We're big fans of that. So your step number two, I think, we're big fans of that, and your mindset, you know, it's really, really good ideas there. You know, in the second article you wrote for us, The Problem with Cash Flow Isn't What You Think It Is, you wrote, quote, most of the time my clients believe they know the problem, but have only identified a symptom and cannot even begin to see the root problems. Why is it that business leaders have so much trouble getting past the symptom to the root cause?
Number one, the smaller the company, the more that the business leader is a technician with an entrepreneurial in. If anyone's read E-Myth, you know that's Michael Gerber's saying, and they're not there to do finances. They're not there to manage their cash. They're there to do small engine repair that's blown up now into a large retail store for lawn care equipment and snowblowers, etc. Or they're there to do something, not to manage cash. So what they're seeing is the symptom. I cannot make payroll in 2 weeks. And they'll try to self-prescribe. I need more credit. And if I just had more credit, or I need more sales. And sometimes sales does not cure all. Sorry, but sometimes if you're talking about cash flow, you're going to need more cash up front to sell more at sometimes. And what they're not doing is digging deep, 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 deep. I had a mentor who said, David, it takes up to 7 times asking why to really get to the root cause sometimes. And so I'll walk through one person. We need to make payroll. Great. What's the problem? We don't have enough cash. why? And he didn't know. And so I looked at it and said, you have a ton of inventory. Got $1.5 million of inventory for a $2 million business. Why do you have so much inventory? Well, because we need the new models. Why do you need the new models? Then the old ones work. It's not cars, it's a chainsaw. Nobody keeps track of this stuff. Well, okay, I get it to get a 2% higher discount. Why do you want the 2% higher discount? Well, because of the profits. No, you're spending that all in interest. So why do you really want it? Well, I want to be a platinum dealer. I said, well, so why do you want to be a platinum? Well, it's to get the 2%, but it's the competitor down the road. Oh, okay, but what happens if you're not? Well, what if, but I want the decal that goes on the door. So when my customers walk in, they know I'm a platinum dealer. It's like, do you think the customers really care? And when it came down to it, the answer was no. So the reason they had more too much inventory is because he wanted a decal on the door.
That is such a great example of asking why again and again and again.
Yeah.
A good lesson. What a great lesson. You touched on this earlier. Accountants and our financial statements and accrual accounting can get in the way of good cash flow management. Now, some of that might raise the hair on the back of people's accountants, especially this audience, which is a lot of CFOs and senior finance leaders. We'll put a lot of time into the financial statements, and we treasure those to make us feel better about how we can convert what we're doing to make great cash flow reports. Can you talk about things that we should be doing as in the accounting and finance profession that may not be in our DNA or our training that we need to change our mind on and have a different mindset when it comes to cash flow management?
Absolutely. And before I get into this, let me tell you, I respect the accounting profession. There is a need for accrual-based accounting. There is a need for cash basis accounting. But when it comes to cash flow, they both mess up. You can't, we'll say, well, just get rid of accrual accounting and go to cash basis. No, there's still huge gaps. When it comes to an expense, for example, the gentleman I just talked about who had $1.5 million in inventory had made $250,000 in profit, but had no cash. Why? Because when you buy inventory, that is not an expense. It's a transfer of one asset to another asset. It's going from cash to inventory. That's how accounting works, even cash basis accounting. And so all of a sudden, he's got no cash in the bank account, but it's showing he's making a profit. That is an accounting issue. As a matter of fact, I said I was going to bring this up, and here it is. 70% of the businesses that go out of business are profitable. Mm-hmm. So if they're profitable, what's the issue? And the issue is that 80% of the companies that go out of business have cash issues. So we need to have cash systems in place that measure. And what you talked about, that is not a cure-all, but it is such every company that has, other than the ones that are just flowing with cash, but even then, the 13-week cash flow statement that you can be saying, if you're overflowing with cash, then figure out a way to use it. So invest it, right? And you can have that as part of your 13-week statement. But accounting, the other one, there's another big one. Well, what do you mean I can't expense the $60,000 truck? My tax accountant says I can depreciate it. Well, yes, but you cannot expense it. It's a depreciation, which is this imaginary use that somebody decided a truck is 5 years depreciation. I'm making that up. It might be seven, might be three. Doesn't matter. You're not really spending the money evenly over 7 years, nor an accelerated process over 3 years or whatever it is. That's a false flag. Another one is return of capital. Nobody's upset that you're not getting taxed on money you're borrowing, but return of capital is invisible on accounting statements since you've got big loans. And then the other one is disbursements or distributions, dividends, whatever you call it, to the owners. All these mass cash flow, but they are definitely cash events that have to be measured and will drastically impact your cash flow statement. Sorry, I'm not going to say statement. Your cash flow model that we've talked about. Yeah. So if you're an accountant out there, that's what's going on. This is why your clients are confused. there might be a huge communication gap, and doing the cash flow modeling can really help with communications on what's going on with cash flow.
Well, you know, I'll tell you a story for me. So I came out of these two big, large public companies and spent 22 years of my career there. And when I came out, I worked on a lot of projects, and one of them was a turnaround. And it was the first time, so I'm 22 years into my career, and now I'm getting to understand that why it's important to have the direct cash flow forecast model rather than using the indirect methods that we use. It took me a long time. I said, well, I'm good at cash flow. I've done that. I've done these statements forever. But it doesn't reveal some of the issues that you're talking about. So I think that's so important and really helpful, especially if somebody's coming out of a big company where, you know, you didn't, and I didn't have to worry about cash at these companies. Cash was you know, flush. They were big companies making a lot of money. And we didn't really have to worry about cash. We had the lines to cover it. So it wasn't something that was in our ENA. And I think every small and medium-sized company ought to be putting a model in place that you're talking about, what I call the 13-week cash forecast. So that's great. You know, you do have some ideas on how to help business leaders dig below the surface. So you've talked about the 7 why questions maybe, but is there any other ideas you have on mindset, how we can get business leaders to make sure they get to the root cause of their cash flow issues rather than just the symptoms?
So if you go to CIC60.com, I've got an ebook that's 10 habits that people can implement. And there's no magic bullets. It's accumulation of small things.
You know, assets are not profits, right? Use an example on gold, how the value of gold goes up, but what you haven't recognized that yet. So you haven't recognized the cash. You might write up the gold on your P&L or your balance sheet in your P&L. When you say that, you got to be careful with that.
Well, it's the same thing with real estate depreciation, right? We know that real estate is a depreciable asset, but it generally appreciates over time. And so there's some real disconnect sometimes with our financial statements and what the cash reality might be if you go sell that piece of real estate. Look at almost every aspect of accounting in question. Does it align with cash flow? Or do you have to manipulate it in some way, shape, or form to say, no, it really doesn't represent cash value? Certainly, if I've got a fully depreciated truck on my books, it doesn't mean it's not worth something from a cash perspective. Matter of fact, one of the strategies is go take the truck and borrow against it to get some cash in the bank if you need to do something with it. But yet, if you were to do by accounting, well, it's not worth anything. A banker would say, no, David, what are you, stupid? Your truck's worth $10,000. We'll give you an $8,000 loan. Yeah. Don't tell me it's not worth anything. It's not reality oftentimes. It is accounting based upon rules that were made starting hundreds of years ago that were designed for very large corporations to satisfy the needs of shareholders. So if we don't have shareholders, we have business owners, for example, it's a private company, then do what's best for the private company, not what's best for the shareholders. Well, they are the shareholders. But there's this false sense of importance because we learned accounting principles that they're accounting laws, and they're not. They're principles, and they work well. In my world, I like principles, but I only use them to the best of what they're good for, and then I'll go, doesn't work in this case.
I am so glad you said that and I didn't say that, but it's so spot on, right? I'm glad. But it's very true. And, you know, we historical cost accounting, right? That's what we have, historical cost accounting. So when you see market values for public companies that are completely different than their financials because we don't mark anything to market, that is a big, and it's getting to be a bigger problem as intangibles become more valuable. The financial statements less and less reflect the real value of a company. And that is a fundamental issue. And you're kind of touching on it right now. You're using a little example of the truck that has value, but it's got zero net book value on the balance sheet. That's fundamentally one of the weakest parts of, I think, our accounting systems is that we use historical cost accounting. I happen to come up through a commodity business that deals in commodities, and we marked everything to market, at least on our current assets. All of our inventory was marked to market, mm-hmm. and not marked to market. You know, trying to figure out standard costing and absorption costing and activity-based costing is so much work. In the commodity business, it's easy. You just market to market. Now, that doesn't mean you have the cash. but it means you understand valuation better. So I guess it's
and if you go to sell it today, the day it was valued, that's what the cash you'd bring in theory, right? Because it's still a spot market, but it's a heck of a lot closer.
In an article that really a fun article, you know, it says fire loser clients or keep wasting cash. You talk about two type of clients that you have that are kind of quote, you know, loser clients is kind of a tough word, but I guess we'll use that. And tell us about the two types of clients that can hurt your company.
So I love this when people ask me, because I can get out my wallet and say, okay, you want some French fries? Thank you very much. And here's $10 that to take with the French fries. Oh, and you want a hamburger? Here's $20 to take with that hamburger. When you are losing money on clients, you need to be remembering that you're literally taking cash out of your bank and handing it to the client. So that's the first type of loser client, is the ones that you're literally losing profit and cash on. Now, there could be some that you're not making a profit, but you're actually generating cash. And that's because of some of the stuff we talked about with accounting can be funky. And so then you got to make a decision. Do you need to make a profit, or is cash generation good enough? And people might be saying, well, wait a minute. How can I lose money and yet be generating cash? And my response is, look at the real estate industry, investment real estate. That's the game. Losing money every year, but we're generating cash. The first thing I say is, hey, make sure you give them a chance to become profitable, to generate cash flow. So that's one type of loser clients. I think the other one I talked about, and these are generally the same ones, are ones that are sucking up your time and your energy and your resources. And they can be worse because that's hidden costs. So you could have a profitable from a cash standpoint, but it could be that 80% of your resources are going towards supporting that one client, and you never really see it unless you've got some accounting that allocates cost per client. That's much more difficult. Your team will know who the difficult clients are because they're spending all their time and energy. I'll tell you a story. I was at a public company, won't say which one. We had a massive client. My graphic designer did a cartoon belittling this massive client. I said, you get rid of that and you get rid of every other copy, because they were not an easy client to deal with, but they were a cash cow. And I knew that they were worth every piece of effort that we were putting into them. Right. So you got to balance the two, but hopefully what you've got are companies that are giving you money and you're putting it into your pocket and that are good to work with. There you go. Those are the two types of clients.
That's a great way to look at it. And finance doesn't always have that customer profile, right? The second piece especially, a lot of times we can go and we can get the lifetime value of a customer. We can kind of do the calculations. What gets harder is doing the feedback from the whole team and say, where are we really spending our money? There's a gentleman I've worked with, Brian Higgins, who does something called activity value management. And he considers that in the whole pieces and getting a lot of feedback on how difficult it is to work with different customers and really putting that into the profit margin for those customers, which is kind of a unique way. And accounting frequently doesn't address those issues, right? It's more, again, the numbers game, but taking that relationship side, the investment that you're making that is hidden, as you call it, the hidden cost. And that's becoming more and more important. And data analytics and all the other things, I think the CFO suite is getting to be much closer to being able to dial in some of those things that you're talking about. And not just from a cash flow perspective, but from a long-term strategic perspective.
And that's an example. You just gave an example of step number four that I talked about, which is mentoring. So if it's coming out of the sales department, this might be the sales department. It could be customer service. It could be product support. You just don't know where. It depends on the structure of your company, but that's where you can go as a CFO and sit down and say, listen, we want to talk about these things. Can you give us a list of your top five problem customers? And this is why. This is what we're trying to analyze. We're trying to become more cash flow positive and or profitable as a company, and we could use your help.
I won't let you answer this question, but I'll let people know that you talk about it in the article. You talk about how you have a friendly but firm way of dealing with these customers. And I'll let people go to the article. It's called Fire Losing Clients or Keep Wasting Cash. And it's one of David's articles on CFO.University, where you talk about how to manage yourself out of those relationships. And we won't give it all away here. We'll let people go and read the article. So the last question I have for you, do you have a book or two that you would recommend to the audience?
A book that had a lot of impact on me was Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but then keeping going through the series. It's a series of books, and there's one called Cash Flow Quadrant, which is getting assets that produce cash. And so that's a really great series.
That will wrap up today's CFO Talk. Thank you, David, for joining us and sharing all your insight on cash flow with us.
Thank you, Steve. It was a pleasure to be here.
CFO.University is a community of business leaders, companies, and trusted advisors committed to the professional development of chief financial officers. Learn more about us at www.cfo.university. Until next time, enjoy, learn, engage.